Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History Project Number 2. Selma Berkman and Estelle Kruman are interviewing Seymour L. Rosen on July 14, 1976. Okay. In order to know something about you and your work, Mr. Rosen, we think we have to go back into your family background. Could you give us some information about your father, mother, where they came from, where you came from,
sure.
Some of that information?
Okay, my father was originally born in Romania. The family immigrated to Poland in Radom, Gdańsk.
Would you spell that, can you?
R-A-D-O-M.
R-A-D?
O-M. And that's, and the name of the village was Pszczyska, which I cannot spell.
Was Radom the community?
Radom was the province, or state, in a sense. My mother was born in Warsaw. My grandparents, on my father's side, were a complete musical family and trained my father to be a violinist. My mother's family was non-musical, and she became a singer. Her professional name was Jeanette Neveu.
Spell the last name.
N-E-V-E-A-U. Her family name, however, was Suffis. S-U-F-F-I-S, a Sephardic family living in Poland. My father's family, which I already indicated were musical, trained my father to become one of the better-known violinists in the 20s and 30s. He was in the class with Leopold Auer that produced Misha Elman, Yasha Heifetz, Tosha Zeidel, etc., etc. And his name was Max Rosen, and he was billed as the Prince of Violinists, because he wore spats. On leaving Europe in 1920, he was seriously injured by German guards on the border between Leipzig and Poland, which seriously hampered his career.
On border? Between where?
Leipzig and Poland.
Because he was not permitted to go over the border?
He was going back to see his family. It was not his intention to come to the United States at that time. He was going really to say goodbye to his family when he tried to see them. You must understand that this was at a very critical time in German history and in German-Polish history. It was just at the end of the war. If you remember, Germany was in terrible financial straits at the time. They beat him over the back with the butt of a rifle, which created quite some problem. He subsequently emigrated to the United States with his family, where he immediately on recovery resumed a career as a concert violinist.
Now, his family, meaning his parents or his wife?
His parents.
His parents. He wasn't married.
Well, my parents met in this country, mm-hmm. Part of the ghetto, right, or out of the Jewish ghetto on the east side.
Came with his family and resumed his violin.
Resumed as a concert violinist, and quite a successful one in this country as well as in Europe.
In which city did he sell?
In which city did he sell? He toured the United States as a concert violinist.
I missed the names of whom he studied with.
Leopold Auer. He had previously studied with Willy Hess in Berlin as a very young child. He was in the class with Arthur Fiedler, with Willy Hess. The family then sent him to St. Petersburg, where he studied with Leopold Auer. He is somewhat younger, or was somewhat younger, I should say, than Heifetz and the others. He is now dead. He died in 1971. My mother's career flourished largely after 1925 in this country, till about 1933 or 4. I was born in 1925.
Where did she sing?
She was a recitalist in the United States. She was with the what was then called the Oscar Hammerstein Opera, Manhattan Opera.
Their base was New York?
The base was New York, although until I was 2.5 years old, I spent most of my life in Springfield, Missouri.
Why? Where were you born?
I was born in New York, but the first 2.5 years of my life was spent in Springfield, Missouri, where my aunt and uncle lived, and where my parents would leave me when they went off on their various escapades.
And what was the name of your aunt and uncle, and what relationship were they?
They were my mother's sister and brother-in-law. Their name was Mr. and Mrs. Ben Sussman. My aunt's name was Eva Sussman. Her maiden name was Suffis, as my mother's.
Do you have any other, in other words, you were very close, I'm sure, with the Sussmans, but do you have any other aunts and uncles?
Oh, yes, there were 8 children in my mother's family and 5 in my father's.
Oh.
My mother has 2 remaining, my mother is still alive. She has 2 remaining siblings.
And where does your mother live today?
West Palm Beach Park.
Active in music circles? Or?
Not at all.
No?
No, she's, my father's career ended about 1935 for reasons of health. And we moved to a poultry farm in New Jersey.
1935?
35. We moved to a poultry farm in New Jersey. My father had always loved the country and loved farms. His grandfather in Poland ran a big dairy farm. He couldn't own the land, as you know. But he did lease the land from the Graf, the Count, and ran a dairy farm in Rodham, or Schisser.
But here it was a poultry farm.
Pardon me? But in Lakewood, New Jersey, it was a poultry farm. And
Lakewood, is that near Chautauqua?
Lakewood, New Jersey, which is near Freehold, and not too far from Trenton, that area. Big farming area, big poultry farming area in New Jersey. That's where New York City got its fresh eggs from. Subsequently, my father gave up music and became a wholesale egg dealer in New York City. The family moved back in 1937 to New York, and my father spent the rest of his working life as an egg man.
Still kept an interest in music, or was too busy?
He looked at the violin every once in a while.
Really?
Yeah, very bitter man. He was a very, very fine violinist, but the German training, which was his first training, made him a very precise violinist, not with a big projecting kind of sound that is associated, say, with Misha Elman or some of those. And he was, quite frankly, jealous that he never had the recognition that some of his classmates had. However, in the musical community, he was perhaps more highly regarded than some of those.
The German training made him... What did you say?
Very precise.
You were growing up in this early life of the musicians who were performing, but you lived the first 2.5 years with your aunt and uncle. When did you come into this performing musical family?
In 1928, when I moved. Well, the whole family basically lived in Springfield, Missouri, for those 2.5 years, the first 2.5 years of my life. We then moved back to New York City. And while the milieu was musical, it was also very much part of the Jewish theater. Maurice Schwartz was a very good friend of my father and mother.
Don't go too fast.
Pardon me?
Don't go too fast.
Okay. Are you writing this as well as taking it on tape?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Maurice.
Schwartz, the Jewish Art Theater in New York. A very fine theater. I don't know if you know about the theater life in New York in the Jewish community.
I know it was
rich,
active.
Very rich. Paul Muni came out of that theater.
Yeah. Did they know him too? Was he
one of
your...
Yeah, and I was the little kid that bothered them when they used to have big political, social, art arguments. It was a very exciting kind of household. And since they were one of the very few that were married and with a family at this point, most of the congregating took place in our home. So there was always a stream of people coming through who were either musicians or actors, poets, and so on and so forth.
Now, are you the only child?
No, I'm not. I have a sister who was born in 1932.
And what is her name?
Beverly. She lives in New Jersey, Chester, New Jersey, where she and her husband are both school teachers. Their name are Mr. and Mrs. Raymond Scheer, S-C-H-E-E-R. They have four children.
Now, can you give us some information as to the atmosphere? You did tell us about the musical and the poets and the artistic part of it. What about your religious background? Was there any sort of that?
My parents were, I sort of gave you an idea already that they sort of traveled with the intelligentsia of New York City. They did not believe in deep religious training. However, I was taught to read and write Jewish.
Yiddish.
Jewish.
Well,
which
not
I believe,
Hebrew, though.
Not Hebrew. My complete training is in Jewish. And I still read and write Jewish and will speak it. I've had no training in Hebrew at all. None.
You were not Bar Mitzvah?
I was not Bar Mitzvah.
And no synagogue affiliation?
Only through my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, who took me to synagogue from the time I was about 4 years old. I remember turning on the gas jets and doing other mischievous things like that. It was quite a problem to him.
Where was that, in Springfield?
No, that was back in New York when I was about four or five.
Until what age do you think you were?
Well, he died when I was seven. And I would say that along with my my own parents, he probably had the strongest influence in my life. He's the man who taught me to speak Yiddish, not to read or write it. But I spoke Yiddish from the time I was 4 years old. And I learned from my grandfather.
Did your father's parents ever get to the United States?
Yes, they did.
So all your grandparents...
I was very fortunate that I had four doting grandparents.
While we're talking about your home life, the economic situation in New York with this group of artistic people, was your family earning a living at that time?
In the 20s, yes. The problems came in the 30s when they came for everyone. My grandfather was, my maternal grandfather, who I referred to, was a very religious man, and also a socialist, which was a very interesting combination of person, and a delightful human being. And as I say, I felt very extremely close to him.
What did he do for a living?
He worked for Rokeach, which was the kosher soap and food manufacturer. He retired in the early 30s. They retired him would be a more correct way of putting it, in the early 30s.
And when your paternal grandparents came, what did that grandfather do?
My paternal grandfather was a musician in Europe and had also been trained as a wood trimmer, worked on a wood lathe. He tried to find work in this country, similar to what he had been trained for. He was much too old at that point to be a musician, and he was a klezmer. Basically.
A
klezmer, the local town musician.
Oh. But what did he play?
He played several instruments, clarinet, violin, bass, as a matter of fact, which I subsequently played.
I've seen.
Yeah.
So he didn't do anything special when he came?
Well, no, he finally became a greengrocer.
Where did he live?
Where he lived in New York. He passed away now. And my grandmother took care of her family. I mean, here there were five children on that side, all of whom are now gone, all by law. My father, who was the oldest, was the last to go.
So all of that side's gone, the grandparents and
grandparents
father.
And all my aunts.
And your father.
I have some cousins, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
What about your discipline in that type of home as you were growing up? You
discipline.
Mentioned discipline. How were you? How strict were they?
They were strict.
But you were still mischievous.
I was mischievous, and they were strict, and I was always in trouble. I was always being punished for something or other. I guess I still am.
All right. Now let's get to your education.
Okay.
Grade school.
Excuse me. May I go back a minute?
Sure.
You mentioned his grandfather was a socialist. What about your parents and the upbringing you came, what sort of a political background?
It would be hard to say that there was any specific political identification on their part. I would say, if anything, they were on the progressive left side of Democratic politics in New York City.
But not active in...
No, they were not. They were artists. Mm-hmm. And their identification was not political.
Right, now your education.
Okay, I went to public school in New York City.
In what section of New York did you
live? We lived in Queens, in a little village, in a little part of it called Middle Village, sort of a low middle income area, which was predominantly Jewish, although there were rather a heavy Italian concentration there as well. And I went to the public school there, PS 87 it was called. And I was a rather good student in elementary school. And pretty soon they had me playing the piano. And my first teacher was Mrs. Eddy, who must have died about 100 years ago. I remember her as a very, very old woman.
Did you take these piano lessons at school?
No, I took them at home privately. I think from the time I was about 8 or 9. And I went to a public high school in New York City called Grover Cleveland High School, which was in a part of New York City named Ridgewood. A very volatile area in those years, because it was where the German community lived and where the Bund had
Ridgefield,
its...
Ridgewood.
Where the Bund had its probably largest following anywhere in the United States.
What years were these?
I went to high school between 1938 and 1942.
Were these people, were your classmates too?
Oh, yes. I don't know whether the Bundes were my classmates or not. You didn't go up and ask them, are you a Bund member?
No, were they active in your school?
They were active in the school, they were active in the community. As a matter of fact, when the Jewish kids came from Middle Village, which was somewhat known as a Jewish area, we used to have to walk along railroad tracks, and we walked with broken bottles in our hands to protect ourselves. And we used to fight on top of the boxcars. It became pretty good. In 1942, I started Queens College, which is a New York City school. New York City College, part of the New York City University today. It wasn't then. At the end of that year, I went into the Army. I was given basic training in the infantry, and then sent to Louisiana State University to become an engineer, because I'd had a musical background, which is the way the Army operates. After about 3 or 4 months, that program was broken up because they needed fodder, and I was placed into the 99th Infantry Division.
Placed in what division?
99th Infantry Division, which coincidentally is the National Guard Division that is headquartered in Western Pennsylvania and Pittsburgh.
Now,
had been then too, except that I was shipped to Texas. And shortly thereafter, they put us on trains. Where in Texas? Camp Maxey, Paris, Texas.
I'm from Texas.
Are you? It's just up near Texarkana, mm-hmm. Between Texarkana and Dallas, that area. And about 3 or 4 months later, they put us on trains and shipped us off to the East Coast, and then to a port of embarkation, and then they gave us a boat ride.
Where?
To England.
This was what year?
This was 1944. In the summer. June, thereabouts. Right, just about the time of D-Day. And we landed in England, and we were in England for about 2 or 3 weeks in a little village called Bedminster, and then they moved us again across the channel into France. And I fought through Belgium into the Hertgen Forest and the Ardennes. And then I became a guest of the German government in the Battle of the Bulge. I was a prisoner of war. Captured on December 20th, 1944.
Where? In the Battle of the Bulge?
In the Ardennes. what town? I was outside of the village of Losheim, which is Luxembourg, actually, not Germany. L-O-S-C-H-E-I-M, I believe, is the spelling. And
how long was the prison?
Till the following, we were liberated on April 29th by the 99th Infantry Division, coincidentally. 1945.
Which division?
99th Infantry, my own.
Oh, and he was.
Yeah. And on May 8th, which is my birthday, they flew us to Reims in France and subsequently put me on a boat. And on June 5th, I returned to the United States, 1945. They kept me at the camp there for 2 days, and I returned home on June 7th with a 67-day furlough. It was called a rehabilitation furlough. I was not rehabilitated. I met my wife.
Well, how many days were you sent home for?
67 days.
To the rehabilitation.
Now, where did you meet her?
I had been a counselor at a camp before I went overseas.
This is in New York. You sent home to New York.
Right, where my home was. I went to work. I had worked in this summer camp as a child, not as a child, but as a young adult, or adolescent.
In New York State?
No, actually it was in New Jersey, about 70 miles out of New York. So I went up to see some of my friends at the camp, and they suggested that since I had 67 days, why don't I spend some time there? Well, I did. I spent 2 weeks there. And during those 2 weeks, I met my wife, who was the swimming counselor and the dance counselor at the camp. And it took me 3 days to ask her to marry me. And the following June, we were married.
All right, now what was her maiden name?
Bernice Malkind. M-A-L-K-I-N-D.
And she's from New York?
She's from New York. And we were married the following June. I was already going to Juilliard at that point.
And tell us about that.
Well, wait a minute, your 67 days was up already. What did they do, let you out then?
Well, after the 67-day, I have to tell you about that. The Army, in its wisdom, now decided that since the war was over, they could safely put me into a band.
This is 45.
This is the summer of 45. And so when I returned to the hands of the armed services, they assigned me to the 374th Army Service Forces Band, stationed at Lake Placid, New York, at the Lake Placid Club, which is awfully hard to take.
This is before you were married?
Before we were married. And we were stationed there until October. They moved us in October to Framingham, Massachusetts, the Cushing General Hospital, from where I was separated from the Army on December 1st, 1945. During the course of those battles that I was in, they hung a couple of pieces of metal on me, if you want to know about that.
Yeah, we do.
And they also put a couple of pieces of metal in me.
What, were you injured as you were wounded? I mean, as you were captured?
No, I've been wounded before I was captured, and not seriously, fortunately. A couple of pieces of shrapnel in the hands and in the back, some of which I still carry as souvenirs.
Tell us about the medals you won while
that. I have the Silver Star and the Bronze Star. And obviously the Purple Heart, because I was wounded.
As long as we're talking about the Army still, how was your relationship as a Jew in the Army? Were you with mostly Jews, or were you assimilated?
No, I was one of the very few Jews in my in any place I went. I had no problem particularly, except for one sergeant, who at one point called me a big Jew, and I hauled off on him, and we became very good friends after that. That's been the extent of my problems with being a Jew.
Yeah. Now, when you were separated from the Army, how did you get to Juilliard?
Well, for one thing, I was entitled as a wounded GI. And with a disability, to Public Law 16. I came out of the Army in December and enrolled in Juilliard immediately and started going into the spring semester at Juilliard. And continued until I graduated in 1949.
That's from 46 to 49. In what field before you showed?
Instrumental music. And as a double bass player. In high school, we skipped something here. In high school, I had begun to play double bass. And by the time I was in my last year of school, I was working professionally, a member of the union. So I was a bass player. And anybody who paid me, I played for, including Muggsy Spanier, Bobby Sherwood, Jerry Wald. And I also played concerts in September. I was on the road with those bands and so on. I had the distinction of playing in Nick's in Greenwich Village, which was a very famous jazz place in those years, with people like Pee Wee Russell and Muggsy Spanier and Eddie Condon, etc., etc.
So
Jack Teagarden.
Your background is classical and
jazz.
And jazz.
Right.
Would my son like to know you?
Why?
Eddie Condon, Jack?
Teagarden, trombone player.
Now, how come when you went into the Army, they didn't discover all this talent?
Well, I was 6 feet tall. I weighed 185 pounds. I was built with swinging doors. You know, I was a strong kid. And, actually, before I'd gone into the Army, I took, I was really slated to be trained as an engineer because of the examination I'd taken before I went into the Army. And so they did start training me for engineering, mm-hmm. and then closed down that program and put me into the infantry. That's
where they needed you.
That's where they needed us.
Right.
So that's pretty much what happened there. I don't know if I've left anything else out in the background so far, but pretty much you caught me up to adulthood at this point.
Now, we were talking about health, and you mentioned your wounds. Is that your own? Because medical care as you grew up, what was your medical care as a child? Nowadays you have
health issues. They took my tonsils out when I was 5 years old. I don't remember any other problems. And I don't think that was a very serious problem.
The next thing you'd like to ask is about, do you have any children?
Yes, I have 2 children.
All right, tell us about them.
My daughter, who is now 25, is a school teacher in Norwich, New York.
And her name?
Judy. And she teaches social studies. Was a labor history major at the University of Wisconsin. And did her graduate work at University of Pittsburgh.
Where was she educated?
University of Wisconsin, and graduate work at Pitt. My son, who was the younger of the two, he's now just turning 23, is a musician, a bass trombone player,
name?
Jesse. J-E-S-S-E.
Musician.
Father of David. Sure. And
what does he play, did you say?
Bass trombone. He is a graduate student at Juilliard right now, and at this very moment is in Chicago studying with the bass trombone player of the Chicago Symphony, whose name is Kleinhammer.
How do you spell that?
Kleinhammer. Think.
He's the bass trombone.
Bass trombone player of the Chicago Symphony.
Is your daughter married?
My daughter is not married. And in Norwich, New York, she has very few prospects. It's a city of 9,000.
And where have you lived between the time you were in New York, getting married, and coming to Pittsburgh?
Okay, well, when I got out of school, I started working as a musician and played first in the Dallas Symphony, then the Minneapolis Symphony, then I was the principal bass player in the St. Louis Symphony. During this part of my life, my wife, who was a dancer, was teaching in Boulder, Colorado, at the university there. And we decided it was a hell of a way to be married. So we both quit our jobs and came home to New York in 1953.